I'm Gene Kansas. You're listening to Sidewalk Radio. We cover the arts, architecture, design, development, city planning, preservation. And today's show, All Aboard the Beltline, explores Atlanta's historic relationship with rail and the future of transit for our city.
The railroad is really why we're here. The railroad was built first. Atlanta was originally just sort of a junction point, a connection point among other railroads. And so it wasn't clear at the very beginning how important a city that would be.
The reason that Atlanta became a target in the Civil War was because of the railroad system. And you got to remember, Atlanta is one of the only major cities in the United States today that's not built on either a navigable waterway or a port. I mean, it is entirely dependent on its overland transportation routes, railroads, highways, and now the airport. Well, in the 1860s, it was the railroads, and it was at the junction of four major railroads, the Western and Atlantic that came down from Chattanooga, the Georgia Railroad that went over to Augusta, the Atlanta and West Point that went over into Alabama, and the Macon and Western that went down, obviously, to Macon.
100 years ago, we didn't have 21 lanes of asphalt disconnecting the center of Atlanta, carrying 500,000 cars a day. We had congestion of a different sort. We had a congestion problem down at our railroad station. And so these private railroads, 33 in all, that came and fought for space downtown, started to come up with their own ways around that. And four of them built belt lines or bypasses around downtown's congestion and are today what make up that 22-mile loop of the Atlanta Beltline.
The Beltline is currently 22-mile loop of abandoned rail that connects 45 different neighborhoods, will increase parks and green space by 40%, and spur an estimated $20 billion in economic development.
It started with one guy getting his master's thesis at Georgia Tech, taking it to city council president, who then went with him to every neighborhood along the Atlanta Beltline, 45 in all, to every NPU, neighborhood planning unit, around the city. So it's inherently a grassroots project, and that very first idea was transit.
You're listening to Sidewalk Radio. Today's show, All Aboard the Beltline. We have four guests today. Brian Leary is president and CEO of the Atlanta Beltline.
Transit, at the end of the day, is really what is the big promise of the Atlanta Beltline.
Gordon Jones is the senior military historian for the Atlanta History Center.
You know, we cannot appreciate where we are today unless we know where we've been in the past. And that's particularly true here in Atlanta because, you know, we're changing so fast.
Jeff Morrison is an architect, a sculptor, and a preservationist.
The inspiration came actually from an early tour of the Beltline as the previous roadbed was being removed, and there were all these stacks of railroad ties, and I just thought, boy, there's got to be something great you could do with this.
And then Robert West, a visual historian and a painter of trains.
And to watch that train come around the curve there near Moncrief Road at speed, and watching those five purple, yellow, and silver diesels lean into the curve, and this flash of brilliant stainless steel pass by at 80 miles an hour, that did it. I mean, it's like pouring coal onto a already burning fire.
I've lived in Atlanta for 15 years, and I know the city really well by nature of what I do through commercial real estate. But even I didn't really truly know what the Beltline
was. The Atlanta Beltline is going to be 22 miles of transit.
Even where it was.
Two tracks, one in each direction.
You know, we pass it every single day.
If you're heading east on Ponce de Leon and you're coming up on Whole Foods or Home Depot or City Hall East, you're about to pass under a bridge before you kind of move on toward Virginia Highland. That bridge is the Atlanta Beltline. Or let's say you're coming down from Cobb County and you're going to get off at Northside Drive to come in the backside to Atlantic Station or to Coca-Cola or to the Dome for a game. As soon as you exit on Northside Drive off 75, you pass under a bridge. That could be the Atlanta Beltline. You know, if you're heading on the south side, heading down to the airport, and you just pass University Ave.
One of the most fascinating parts to me about the Beltline is that by walking on it and soon, you know, biking or the light rail, you find out how
neighborhoods already, and that's what we'll reconnect.
Closely connected Atlanta is.
The segment from Piedmont Park down to DeKalb Ave. Along the lines, you're connecting Virginia Highland, Inman Park, Fourth Ward, number of neighborhoods that have not really been well connected by roads or even by sidewalks. That's about 2.5 miles as the crow flies, right? You could actually today, if you were on a bike, you could make that run much faster than you can drive that same route. Right? When a train's running, forget it. No way you'll be able to keep up in a car. It's a straight shot connecting right through kind of a disconnected grid. So you imagine 100 years ago where the Atlanta Beltline is today was out in the countryside. And so it was you know, cheap land. They could shoot straight lines. And the neighborhoods grew up around these belt lines. And so what we're doing is we're kind of systematically working our way around and getting under control, either through ownership or leases, those different belt lines so we can piece them back together in some ways like a quilt to provide connectivity among 45 different neighborhoods.
The abandoned rail line that the belt line follows is more than just a walking and jogging and biking and light rail path. I mean, it is tied to Atlanta's physical development, our creation story.
The Zero Mile Post is sort of a forgotten landmark. It marked the terminus of the Western and Atlantic Railroad, which was the first railroad that was surveyed to this point, becoming the origination of our city. It was used as the center point of the original city limits, whereas usually they would use the courthouse. It was 1837 is when the first survey point hit here.
So is that the year Atlanta was founded?
Well, it was at that point it was known as Terminus, and that literally was just because that was what they called the end of the survey line on their map. It was just a point on the map. And it's pretty interesting because there were other things in the area. The city of Decatur was about 10 years old. There was a stagecoach stop called Whitehall in what's now West End. But the railroad specifically didn't make an effort to terminate at any of these developing communities. It was really built as a railroad to nowhere, pretty much.
Down by the county bridge, Condola Road, hauling down to Birmingham, the dirty half-slack coat. I should let her move me on, come sunshine, rain, or drought. Was just like the circle said, Southern serves the South. Hardships and troubles, Lord, you know I've had some. Getting older every day, I'm a fair weather bum. Let me tell you, good people here, it's just about time. Catch a slow train through Georgia, then eastward it might.
You're listening to Sidewalk Radio. Today's show, All Aboard the Beltline. Historically, the rail played a major part in the Civil War.
The campaign for Atlanta is essentially a campaign fought over the railroads. Abraham Lincoln is up for re-election, and he is being vehemently opposed in the North by the peace wing of the Democratic Party, and they are opposed to a continued war against the Confederacy, which they see as being a useless waste of blood and treasure, and, you know, it's an unwinnable war. They're opposed to emancipation. And Lincoln really needs, the Republican Party really needs a victory, a strong victory, to show the Northern public that the war is winnable, and Atlanta is that victory. What Sherman has to do in order to take the city is to cut off its railroad links to the rest of the Confederacy, hence to cut off its supply lines, to cut the arteries that supply the heart. And so he advances on Atlanta from Chattanooga down the Western and Atlantic Railroad, so he's got that railroad. Then he moves east to the Georgia Railroad that connects Atlanta to Augusta, and he cuts that railroad. And that has to do with the Battle of Bald Hill or the Battle of Atlanta on July 22nd. He sends his cavalry around to the west of town, and he takes out the Atlanta and West Point Railroad. That leaves one remaining supply line into Atlanta, and that's the Macon Railroad. And that's the one that the Confederates extend their defense line to protect, to keep that last supply line open, because they're, you know, using 400, 500, 600, 700 tons of supplies every day. So that remaining supply line down to Macon is really what the campaign is about. And Sherman finally gets the bright idea to take his entire army, with the exception of one corps, and he swings them wide out to the west of the city, all the way down to Jonesboro, which is, you know, that point 15 miles below Atlanta, and he cuts that remaining railroad, and that's on August 30th and September 1st of 1864. And it's that moment that the fate of our country really changes, because he's cut the last supply line into Atlanta. That means the Confederacy has to abandon Atlanta, or else the Confederate Army at that point under John Bell Hood is going to get starved out and lose the entire army. So Hood withdraws rather than to let that happen. And at the same moment, the Democratic Party in Chicago is nominating their peace candidate, George McClellan, on the platform that the war cannot be won. Well, Sherman has just won it. And without that victory, we could have possibly seen a negotiated peace with the Confederacy, in which case everything that we know about American history would have changed. So this is that great turning point moment that nobody really knows about, but it happened right here in the Atlanta area.
That was Gordon Jones, senior military historian for the Atlanta History Center. Just as vital as trains were to the physical development of Atlanta, they're also crucial to our visual identity and development. And you see a lot of artists exploring trains in their work.
Steam locomotives being more functional in scope because it has outside reciprocating parts, and you can see how one part interfaces with another part, are actually more difficult than diesels. The difficulty in painting diesels is painting them and making them appear as if they're moving, because it's all internal combustion and there are no outside reciprocating parts. I love the challenge of illustrating steam locomotives because, as engineers and train enthusiasts used to say and still do, that they're alive. As a kid, I used to doodle trains in my father's books and even in some of my grandfather's books. I was nurtured along the way, not just by time, but by my relationship with my grandfather, who had a wonderful influence on me because he was a Pullman porter, one of those distinguished gentlemen, traveling men with cosmopolitan sensibilities, as they used to call them. Pullman porters were... Their history is such an incredible history because they were basically taken from the plantation and placed on trains to serve the traveling public, in this case, the white public. I was so touched by the fact that the president chose as a conveyance to his inauguration the train in several significant ways. Since we're here in Atlanta, I might add that the train car that the president went to the inauguration on at one time actually traveled along the Belt Route. It belonged to the Georgia Railroad, and it belonged to the CEO of the Georgia Railroad, and that train car is the Georgia 300, which was initially, of course, the Georgia Railroad was a lessor of the Georgia Bank and Trust Company. And I said, here's the time to once and for all connect my past, my genealogical history, with what is happening now at a very historic moment. So I placed my grandfather in that painting, because as a Pullman porter, the Pullman porters, Mr. E.D. Nixon, who was a Pullman porter based in Montgomery, Alabama, was the individual that personally received permission from A. Philip Randolph, the president of the Pullman porters, the International Brotherhood of Pullman Porters, to bail Rosa Parks out of jail. And with that, he also received the impetus to ask Dr. King if he would lead the Montgomery bus boycott movement as a result. And, of course, that placed the International Brotherhood of Pullmans right in the middle of the civil rights movement. And so I said, well, there's my grandfather. I see what the Pullman porters did. And so I placed Rosa Parks in the painting. And then, of course, Abraham Lincoln took a similar trip, a similar journey during his inauguration. And so I said, all this coincides. And That's what rail does. You know, like the couplers of a car that hold the train cars together, they connect. And so there is some connectivity there. And so what a great metaphor to add into a painting.
I use the railroad ties as a way to reconnect to the industrial nature of the site. I did a piece that's called Cribbing. It's a sculpture made out of reclaimed railroad ties. It's a series of spaces. One is kind of a long serpentine wall. One is sort of a half eggshell that has benches on the inside. And then the third piece is a small hexagonal shaft with tiny little doors that you sort of crawl into. There's space for one person, a space for a group, and then a space of passage. And then they're all linked together, and the way they sit next to each other creates, I think, an interesting interplay of spaces.
And the name?
Cribbing? Cribbing is actually what you call when you take timbers and stack them up in this interlocking fashion, usually for temporary support or protection. And so I saw those ideas about support and protection and temporary linking back to my piece. It was really about celebrating the transformation of the space of the Beltline. The material is these recycled railroad ties, and that really was emphasizing the whole theme of reclaiming this formerly industrial space as public amenity space. Then using them in a new fashion that highlights the new nature of the site, which is really wooded and very park-like, even though, I mean, it hasn't been developed as a park yet. But because it's been sort of leftover space for so long, that's what we're trying to do, is get people to see it. And one thing I loved about bringing the railroad ties back on the site was that not only do they reference the history of the site in terms of the railroads and the infrastructure and the industry, but they're so old and starting to decay that they're kind of on that brink of turning back into a natural logs. They have this quality of age and dirt and decay that lean back towards the natural aspects of the site.
That was Jeff Morrison, architect, sculptor, railroad enthusiast.
When I was a boy, in the days of the train, I'd sit by the tracks on a long summer day, and I'd wave to the brakeman, and he'd wave back at me. While the thunderclouds rolled out of East Tennessee, but the dreams of a boy disappear when you're grown. And though I may dream, the railroads are gone. The ties, they are rotted, and the track shot to hell along with my dreams and the old railroad bell.
You're listening to Sidewalk Radio. Today's show, all aboard the Beltline. Historically and in the early days, the rail was the economy of Atlanta, what made Atlanta a business hub. But then today, we hardly ever think about the rail. It's interesting to think and to know that in the future, the Beltline could be the catalyst that sparks a shift back toward the rail being very important to our city and to our development.
These trains are on the ground. When you look out the window, you see daylight, you see trees, you see people walking. A station is not a million cubic yards of concrete. A station is basically a curb or a platform to step right on the train and go. And that's, so that's kind of the first thing. The other thing is that the Atlanta Beltline, if you think of it as a loop, a circle kind of equidistant between downtown and the perimeter, circling the city, will connect to the existing MARTA line in five different locations: the North Line, the East Line, kind of the South Line, even the West Line. So those four cardinal points will be connected by a new loop, expanding the reach that MARTA has today.
Being able to be connected in a city and to property specifically is extremely important. If you take Grant Park as an example, when I-20 separated that neighborhood, it went through a long period of decline. Interestingly enough, that helped preserve that historic neighborhood because no one really wanted to live there. And then it was re-pioneered by artists and young families and educators and people who cared about that neighborhood. And when it started to come back to prominence, they were there to help be stewards of the neighborhood.
The city of Atlanta is a city of neighborhoods. Don't ever forget that it's where the neighborhoods are where the history of Atlanta rests. One of our great neighborhoods where the Atlanta Beltline kind of actually started is the West End neighborhood. The West End neighborhood predates Atlanta. It was an old stagecoach stop, grew up as a town before they even drove a stake for a railroad farther north for Atlanta. And so in the West End, with this tremendous history of the Uncle Remus stories and the civil rights movement and things like that, there is a real dynamic, even retail culture down there too, that if it was now on a transit line, it might get discovered kind of like the way East Atlanta did, because people could find it on the interstate, or Inman Park has for years. By connecting these fantastic and rich neighborhoods to the rest of Atlanta, will make the city a smaller place and provide opportunities for economic development as well.
And I think what it would help us do also is get back in touch with that history that you would otherwise not see if you're just driving down the highway. But if you're able to walk a path and you're able to see these areas, you know, it helps us get back in touch with our past and our roots and what makes Atlanta unique and what's different about Atlanta than other cities in the South.
I really see in the long-term future that the Beltline has the potential to be one of the defining things about our identity. And it's great because it started out being an idea mostly about transit, and it's already outgrown that. And it's about parks, and it's about trails, and it's about art. And the scale of it, and then the way it's designed to interconnect and harness everything, really has a potential to become a defining vision for the development over the next 25 or 30 years.
I'd like to thank our guest, Brian Leary, President and CEO of the Atlanta Beltline, Gordon Jones, Senior Military Historian for the Atlanta History Center, Robert West, trained painter and visual historian, and Jeff Morrison, architect, a sculptor, and a preservationist. This is Sidewalk Radio with Gene Kansas.